The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Okay, it's TV time. We've Joe, Shane, Jennifer, Gannon with us with all the recommendations of things you might want to watch. And I think we'll actually start with reality documentaries because here in the Cooper House this week, we've all been together watching Tiger King, I think along with a good chunk of the country who've been watching it on Netflix. So before we actually talk about it, let's hear a clip. And we have to give you the almost obligatory this stage bad language warning.
There are more captive tigers in the U.S. than there are in the wild throughout the world.
You know, people are nuts, man. They're all crazy. I'm sure y'all got a story to tell.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Joe Exotic, and this is Sarge.
He was like a mythical character living out in the middle of bumfuck Oklahoma who owned 1,200 tigers and lions and bears and shit.
Come here, love me.
Matt spoken, good looking, love to party and have fun.
I don't think we're done blowing shit up today.
I don't figure you are.
They have a heart and a soul and a mind. I've learned from them.
But Carol Baskin keeps saying, I can't have these tigers.
If he ever had an enemy in his life, it was Carol Baskin.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens. It's Carol at Big Cat Rescue.
Carol is the Mother Teresa of cats.
We will end the private possession of these cats.
This is my way of living, and nobody's going to tell me any otherwise.
What a cast of characters. Some of them a bit crazy, but they're certainly a cast of characters. And what twists in the story. Jennifer, let's not give away too much of it for those who haven't watched Tiger King yet. But would you recommend it as a view? And if so, why?
I recommended it on this very show 2 weeks ago. It was my pick of the week. And I just think it's part true, like a work of true crime. It's part graphic kind of nature documentary and part reality TV. And I think that's, it's just become must-see television for everyone. I think we need something to unify ourselves at the moment. And we all love watching a train wreck. And when it involves like over-the-top flamboyant characters, it's even better. And this has gripped us all in isolation because it has everything. It's got wildcats, wild people, drugs, politics, sex, and criminal activity. And it's just one of the things that's making me laugh at this time. And like, there's so many brilliant memes out there that everyone's sending around. And just like this silly kind of conversations we're having about it. Like, Joe Exotic, to quote his own description of himself, is a redneck, gun-toting, mullet-sporting, tiger-tackling, gay polygamist. And if that doesn't suck you in from the beginning, it's just like, it goes, the stakes just keep on getting higher and higher. It feels like fiction. It plays out like a Soderbergh film or like a film by the Safdie brothers. Like, you cannot take your eyes off it. It's so compelling.
And the twist, and then the videos as well. The fact there's so much on film available, the music videos he made, some of which are absolutely hilarious.
I think it's like, it's an attempt, it's a documentary about a man who, you know, wants to be a reality TV star. He's kind of like, he's very low brow. So he's a bit like Honey Boo Boo or, you know, the Duck Dynasty. Like, he's volatile. He's a narcissist. He's like, he does things that are ridiculous, like getting involved in politics just to have people watch him. And, you know,
sorry, he got 19% of the vote in, was it in Kentucky? Wasn't Kentucky? No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
When he ran for governor.
I know. And this is the thing. Like, I think it's, you know, on one hand, it's a great exploration of the American way of life. Like, at its core, it's really a story about, like, libertarian fantasies, like, that are perilously lived out on the edge, on the fringes of society, and about the whole lure of the cheap, you know, fantasy of easy fame. And I think that's what's really sucking people into it as well. I mean, there is the other side of it that people have been talking about, saying that it is exploitative and ideal, that people are being mocked or held up for ridicule. But I think that goes with the territory of these kinds of documentaries. And even, you know, Joe Exotic was featured in a Louis Theroux documentary that's available on Netflix as well years ago. And it's all about those kind of people and why it attracts them, those kind of, you know, almost roadside oddities, these kind of zoos that they have, these petting zoos, and why this lifestyle kind of attracts those kind of people that live outside the law.
Sorry, Joe, have you seen any of it yet?
Yeah, I've watched the first two episodes, and what struck me, first of all, was that after 5 weeks since the barber's closed, I now have the same hairstyle as Joe Exotic.
At least you're not dying it, I hope.
No, I haven't got that far yet. I watched the first two episodes. Everybody was telling me, begging me, haranguing me, you have to watch it, you have to watch it. And I kind of felt a bit left out. So Last week I watched the first two episodes and it didn't grab me. And there's a few reasons why it didn't. I think for a lot of people coming to, there's this thing, a phenomenon called the Florida man, right? So for years, Florida has been kind of associated with crazy headlines in newspapers, and it's always Florida man kidnaps alligator and gets eaten and all these kind of crazy stories. So I was kind of aware of the Florida man phenomenon, and these people don't really interest me very much. I mean, their lives are crazy, chaotic, and wound up in all sorts of terrible behavior, but they're not interesting people per se. They're just crazy people. And I would watch the Louis Theroux documentary a while ago. I'd watch that because that's enough. But six or seven or eight episodes, or how many episodes this whole series is, it just, I can't just watch crazy on top of crazy on top of crazy.
The only thing is, my teenagers, Joe, are watching it, saying, this is why Trump got elected. This is what America is really like.
I'm not sure, it, parts of America, if you traveled in America, you know, America is a big place. They're not all like,
but you do get that.
Thank God.
All right, let's move on. Other reality documentaries. You're recommending something called The Undateables on Channel 4. What's that?
Yeah, this is a show. I think Jennifer is not going to agree with me on this. I think The Undateables is a very good show, and I've talked about it before, and it's a lot of people don't like it, but basically it's back for a new series now, and I think this is the fifth or sixth series of it. It's a very simple setup. It's basically people who would be considered undateable for any kind of reasons. They may have physical defects, they may have mental health issues, they may have disabilities, and undateable is a terrible label in one respect. You know, you're saying nobody would want to go out with you, right? But it's interesting that the Channel 4, the people who made this documentary series, got the tone exactly right. And what it does is, it doesn't go mawkishly over the top, look at these poor guys. It doesn't pity them. It lets them talk about their own lives, their own experiences, the difficulties they face, their love lives or lack of love lives. And I think it's just really well done. And you find yourself kind of rooting for people, you find yourself learning about people and maybe disabilities they have or problems they have that you wouldn't really have considered it in that way before. It's hearing new people talking about their lives and seeing them it doesn't always work for them. It's not first dates, it's not fluffy a lot of the time. They don't always find love, it doesn't always work out for them. When it does, it's great. When it doesn't, you still hear their voices and you learn about their experiences and their views of the world. And I just think it's a great little show. Really good.
Let's hear a little bit from it. This is where Michael and Alice, who both have autism, meet for the first time.
Be calm. Be very calm. Properly.
No.
We introduced before. I'm Michael, by the way. You
Hi.
Must be Alice.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you, Alice.
You too.
Yeah. Well, Alice, do you want to go over to the park bench?
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, Alice, it seems we both got autism, haven't we?
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
Okay, what's your next recommendation, Jennifer? I believe it's called Wild Wild Country.
Yeah, this is probably my favourite documentary of the past decade, really. It's available on Netflix and it is truly fascinating. It's produced by the Duplass brothers and it's about the development and expansion of the Rajneeshi religious organization, who settled in Wasco County in Oregon for a time in the late 70s, early 80s. And it's pieced together through home videos, local news reports, photographs, and interviews that the directors have excavated. And it's basically the history of a cult and the story of its controversial guru, the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, and his completely charismatic second-in-command. And she is really this formidable woman called Ma Anand Sheela. And it's a tale about, you know, this. It's really told with, like, insight and empathy for the people who are willing to tell their stories about, you know, getting involved in this cult and changing their lives and moving away and creating a community within a small town, and how that it transformed them and how the world around them started to move in on the cult itself. And it's really, like, it displays a lot of humanity and it's very respectful, whereas it could, you know, be a shock doc or, you know, something very grotesque. It's actually beautifully told, and I think it's one of the most interesting things I've ever seen.
Okay, let's hear clips from the trailer.
Everybody felt they were there at the beginning of the great experiment.
One of the, and his followers bought it.
Our vision was to create a community
based on compassion and sharing.
Bhagwan's agenda was simply to raise the consciousness of humanity. That was his goal.
America was land of promise. It was my conviction we will have no problems.
I don't think America has a place for these people.
Everyone in Antelope mistrusts Rajneesh.
I want that guru and his evil influence out of my city.
They're run by satanic power.
There is talk of vigilantes who may seek revenge on the Rajneeshis.
A bomb went off in the middle of the community.
More than 60 followers evacuated.
It was a catastrophe.
Okay, I remember trying that before, didn't get into it. I might give it another go again. Joe, you've gone for Brat Camp. What's that?
Yeah, I kind of changed my mind as well since I gave my list in earlier. But I will mention Brat Camp. It's going back a long, long time. But if you've got a lot of time in your hands, and some people do at the moment, these episodes are all available on YouTube. It was made by Channel 4 in the mid-noughties. It was an extraordinary show. Basically, there was a wilderness camp in Utah that specialized in taking deeply troubled teens and putting them through a really tough regime and trying to get them to fix them, is the only way to describe it. And it was just an amazing show. It ran into controversy after three seasons, but the first season won an international Emmy. And it really changed, it really pushed the boundaries of what you could do in terms of reality TV, in terms of reality documentaries. And I just thought it was an extraordinary series that seems to have sunk without trace. So it's called Brat Camp. It's Channel 4. And you can watch all of the first two seasons on YouTube. And if you've got time and if you're interested in that slice of life, I definitely would recommend it.
And would you look back at Bake Off as well, would you?
Well, no, actually, this is the one I changed my mind on because I was thinking about this again. And I was actually thinking there's a new season of Sunderland Till I Die is coming on the Netflix. And I should have mentioned that to you. I've put that on the list because this is, if we're all, like, we're missing sports in a big way. A lot of us are missing sport in a big way. The first season of Sunderland Till I Die, a lot of people watched it, and it's just an amazing behind-the-scenes look at how badly a premiership, or at least a top English football club, can be run. I mean, disaster, heaped on bad decisions, bad luck, everything, you name it. And then the fans in the middle of it all kind of wondering what the hell is going on here. The new season of Sunderland Till I Die has just dropped, as the young folks say, on Netflix. And if you haven't seen the first series, definitely watch it, first season. If you like this, watch the second season. It's just arrived on Netflix. Sunderland Till
and
I Die.
Your last recommendation for reality documentaries, Jennifer, is Falling for a Killer. What's that?
Yeah, this is on Amazon. Now, I know people may be maxed out with true crime shows, but this is a very different documentary series. It's about Ted Bundy, but it centres on interviews with Elizabeth Kendall, who was Ted Bundy's girlfriend during the 70s, and it's told from her perspective and the perspective of her daughter, Molly Kendall, who Ted was a father to, as well as the victims. And I think with true crime documentaries, we can sometimes lose the run of ourselves and become almost addicted to the graphic nature of the crimes. But this brings it back to the reality. It's really about loss. It's about the destruction of families and the ripple effect that these crimes have had on families and whole communities. And I really think it's important that it's made by a woman. And I think, you know, the filmmaker herself, Trish Wood, she was the one that coaxed Elizabeth Kendall into telling her story and into a woman who has never spoke publicly before, who was one of Ted Bundy's early victims, into talking and divulging information about their lives that they previously had never done before. It's an astonishing watch and it's very moving.
So we're doing television with Jennifer Gannon and Joe O'Shea. And while it might be an exaggeration to say that US President Donald Trump is enjoying the COVID-19 crisis, he certainly has been boasting about the numbers that have been watching his nightly press conferences, sometimes which go on for 90 minutes for 2 hours in duration. But there are people asking if the television networks should actually be screening them, because they should perhaps maybe just taking, as in normal news bulletins, the most important bits and highlighting those. Let's just hear a little bit of the type of stuff that Trump comes up with as well at these press conferences. The first little bit is what he believes about using scarves.
As an example on the masks, if people wanted to wear them, they can. If people wanted to use scarves, they can. In many cases, the scarf is better. It's thicker. I mean, you can, if you, depending on the material, it's thicker. But they can do that if they want. Now, a recommendation's coming out. We'll see what that recommendation is.
Let's hear another one. This is where he talks about states that apparently don't have an issue with COVID-19.
There are some states that are different. There are some states that don't have much of a problem. There are some, well, they don't have the problem. They don't have thousands of people that are positive, with thousands of people that even think they might have it, or hundreds of people in some cases.
Of course, this is the man who early on in one of his earlier press conferences back in February was telling us that there was no problem at all. 15 people is all that would get it in the United States. But he has changed his tune a little bit. Here's a press conference from earlier this week.
We're going to go through a very tough 2 weeks. And then hopefully, as the experts are predicting, as I think a lot of us are predicting after having studied it so hard, you're going to start seeing some real light at the end of the tunnel. But this is going to be a very painful, very, very painful 2 weeks. When you look and see at night the kind of death that's been caused by this invisible enemy, it's incredible. I was watching last night Governor Murphy of New Jersey say 29 people died today, meaning yesterday, and others talking about numbers far greater, but you get to know a state. I know New Jersey so well, and you hear 29 people and hundreds in other locations, hundreds in other states.
Okay, that's just some of Donald Trump from his nightly press conferences. Joe O'Shea, should the TV networks be broadcasting them live, unedited and uncritically?
Absolutely not, no. And it's not because I don't think Trump is a very good president. It's because he's literally putting out untruths, dangerous information. He was telling people about two drugs that somebody he saw somewhere on Twitter or somebody mentioned to him can cure coronavirus or fight it, two old malarial drugs. And people started taking them. And people are still taking them. And there's a whole bizarro world on Twitter where people are saying President Trump knows that these two malarial drugs work, but the liberal media are trying to stop people taking them. People have been seriously ill, and in one case, a man may have died because they were taking these drugs. This information, he also said on live TV that he'd stopped flights from China. It turns out he didn't. It turns out that there were still, after the so-called ban on flights, which never actually happened, something like 70,000 people still flew in a few days afterwards and weeks afterwards when he told people he'd stopped flights. He's winging it. He's making it up. He's the first thing that comes into his head. And beyond that, he seems to think he thinks it's about him. He's talking about his ratings. The New York Times piece where a guy, you know, a journalist said that, you know, they're getting huge figures, but they shouldn't be showing this because he's putting out misinformation. Trump took the fact that the New York Times said, oh, he's getting great figures, to say, I'm a ratings hit. He's literally boasting about, I'm the best thing on TV, I'm the biggest thing on TV. He said he was I'm number one on Facebook. They're talking about 200,000 people dying in the U.S., and all Trump can think about is ratings and how popular or how well-known he is on Facebook. It's crazy. They really need to stop covering this, or if they are going to cover it, they need a separate box with an expert saying, no, this is incorrect, that's incorrect, don't do that, please don't do that, and that never happened.
Of course, Jennifer Gannon, a lot of this comes down to as well the influence of Fox News, which for weeks derided anybody who said that there was a serious problem developing with COVID-19, seemed to inflame Trump's initial denial of there being a problem, and which now, given its elderly audience, maybe requires it, seems to have done a volte-face on it.
Yeah, they have done a U-turn on their own reporting about the whole pandemic, and their presenters have started to practice social distancing, and they've started to lean into being concerned about it rather than dismissing it as a flu and laughing at, you know, citizens calling them panic pushers. And it's a huge, you know, about turn for them. When a week ago they were encouraging their audience to still travel and stating how safe travel was at this time. And I think this time has really highlighted the fragile state of the media, you know, where more people are getting their news from suspicious WhatsApp messages and Facebook groups than trusted news sources. There is that schism between those that want to believe in conspiracy theories and they want to think that, you know, there's shady practices in the mainstream media, and those who want sober analysis and trust journalists to actually do their jobs. And we all knew this was the case, but the consequences are completely devastating now. And if even Fox News feel like they must be, you know, responsible and broadcast the truth for once, we know that we're really in this kind of brave new world and all bets are off. And I really feel like we're watching the climax of a TV show called America, and I don't like where this final season is going. I mean, Trump may as well broadcast, you know, sitting on a throne of dead Americans at this stage. Like, that is
from,
the way
from,
it's going.
From a tiger for a camp. Pick of the week, Jennifer, what are you going for, please?
Something completely different, very light. It's Pen 15, and you can watch this on the RT player or you can watch it on Sky Comedy. And it's set in an American high school in the year 2000. And comedians Maya Erskine and Annie Conkle, they play lightly fictionalized versions of themselves in the seventh grade, surrounded by actual 13-year-olds. Now, they're in their 30s, which what makes it so strange, but actually really funny. And the show is very, like, intimate, and it's like reading a teenager's diary. And you see them, you know, just dealing with their hormones, dealing with, like, dating as a 13-year-old, or, you know, be having an interest in boys and everything like that. And, like, their terrible first kisses, their horrible haircuts that are made, like, done by their parents, and bullying and racism and even, you know, divorce. And I think it's immaculately detailed and really well done. Very cringeworthy, as it should be, but it's also really warm-hearted and very empathetic, and I just think it's adorable.
Okay, and Joshua, you're going for a documentary as your choice of the week.
Yeah, BBC Two Wednesday at 9 p.m, The Countess and the Russian Billionaire. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm kind of, as regular listeners will know, I'm a bit obsessed with Putin and Russia and everything that's going on over there. But this is an incredible story. It's about Countess Alexandra Tolstoy, who is part of a British Anglo-Russian family, descendants of the Tolstoys, very high society in the UK. She has a partnership. She's the partner of a Russian billionaire called Sergei Pugachev. They have three children together. Now, Pugachev is an interesting character. He's one of those oligarchs, one of those guys who came up with Putin, pushed Putin to the top. You know, we're familiar with some of the others. He's not one of the best known of them, but he was a right-hand man of Putin, very close to him. But, of course, Putin fell out with the oligarchs. He actually said to Pugachev when he took up, so to speak, with Countess Alexandra Tolstoy, why couldn't you find a nice Russian girl, right? So they fell out, and they found out that being on the wrong side, no matter all the wealth in the world, and they're a billionaire couple, they've three beautiful children, they live in fantastic houses, all the wealth in the world can protect you if you become an enemy of Putin. So this documentary has been years in the making. I think it's going to be a fascinating watch.
I'm definitely going to record that one.
Yeah. High society collides with Putin's Russia.
Thank you very much, Joe Shane, Jennifer Gannon from with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.